Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, January 22nd, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Decatur, City Opens Door to Barns Building Help, by Tony Reed, Decatur. The Decatur City Council voted to take a tentative step toward the revival of a downtown's most prominent address, the 12-story Barns Citizens Building. Council members voted 6-1 Tuesday to adopt an inducement resolution. This outlines the city's intent to evaluate, negotiate, and consider financial incentives or other redevelopment tools to help turn the location into a hotel. A company called Decatur Management Services, LLC, plans a grand mixed-use redevelopment for the site that includes the 120-room boutique hotel called the Treasury. It also foresees developing residential apartments, a restaurant and coffee bar, conference and meeting space, and related hospitality amenities. What the firm got from the council with the passage of Tuesday's resolution was described by interim city manager Melissa Hahn as a procedural step. She said this resolution would preserve the city's ability to consider eligible redevelopment costs under Illinois Tax Increment Financing Law. This TIF is a legal procedure that freezes base property values and allows future property tax increases to fund property improvements and infrastructure upgrades. Hahn told the council in a memo that the inducement resolution will authorize staff to negotiate a potential redevelopment agreement with Decatur Management Services. But she also emphasized the resolution did not approve any funding or commit TIF resources or authorize the execution of a redevelopment agreement. Hahn had said in her memo that there were no known objections to the resolution, but she soon discovered some concerns at the council meeting. Councilwoman Consuelo Cruz didn't comment, but cast the lone dissenting vote. And that vote came after Councilman David Horn said he would vote for the resolution as it didn't lock the council into a financial obligation. But he wondered if this was the best use of TIF monies. He pointed out the TIF covering the Barnes Citizen Street address had been drawn up with the number one goal of enhancing green spaces and parks, improving the housing stock, and fighting urban blight. Horn said a survey of the area had found it contained 1,600 buildings described as deteriorated, while another 200 are dilapidated and in worse condition. And so one overall concern about this particular project, Barnes Citizen, is that if we, in fact, are asked to do a TIF development agreement, is how we are making sure that we are really reaching the 1,600 properties that have deteriorated, Horn asked. He also pointed out that the city had previously had consultants draw up plans for a parking garage next to the Barnes Citizen site, such a garage being seen as essential to its development. The top line estimate for that project came in at a sobering $20.8 million, Horn reminded his council colleagues. And so this particular inducement resolution is perfectly fine, Horn added before the vote was taken. But ultimately, if we're going to get into a redevelopment agreement, we need to make sure that we're meeting objective one for the residents that live in that TIF district. Education. Superintendent announcement eyed for February by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The name of Decatur Public Schools' next superintendent should be announced in February. Superintendent Rochelle Clark announced in October 2024 that she intends to retire as of June 30th this year, and said the reason for making the announcement so far ahead was to give the board plenty of time to search for a replacement. She has served as superintendent since February 2022. The school board engaged the Illinois Association of School Boards to handle the process of finding candidates in summer 2025, and the organization has identified a slate of candidates to move forward in the process. first and second round interviews are scheduled to take place over the coming weeks. If needed, a third round of interviews will follow. Board of Education President Bill Clevenger said the board's goal is to announce the next superintendent in February. Our priority is taking the time necessary to complete our due diligence and to make the right decision for our students, staff, and families, Clevenger said. With the support of our search firm, we have identified strong candidates, and the board remains committed to a thorough and thoughtful process that reflects the needs of the Decatur Public Schools community. Local government. Council hikes tax on diesel fuel, by Tony Reed, Decatur. Drivers in Decatur, do you want the good news or the bad news? The good news is the City Council will now have $700,000 more a year to spend on fixing Decatur's crumbling streets. The bad news? The money is coming from a 4 cents a gallon hike the Council agreed to tack onto an existing 1 cent a gallon local fuel tax for diesel vehicles. The tax will park itself at your local gas station beginning April 1st. Gas vehicle drivers are already paying a 5 cents per gallon tax, and the good news for them is that the council voted to freeze that levy at 5 cents at its meeting Tuesday. But the bad news for all drivers about the local motor fuel tax, as it's officially called, is that it was about to evaporate altogether. When introduced 10 years ago, a sunset clause was added that would have seen that tax driven off the statute books on February 16th. In voting unanimously to hike the diesel fuel tax to bring it in line with the tax on gasoline, the council also agreed to scrub the sunset provision, with no end date currently in sight down the road. That was the recommendation of interim city manager Melissa Hahn and Matt Newell, the city's director of public works. The city's local motor fuel tax currently contributes approximately $1.8 million per year dedicated to the city's Capitol Street Improvement Program, both officials said in a memo to the council. If the tax is allowed to end, the city's Capitol Street Improvement budget will be reduced by that amount. The proposed change to the diesel fuel tax rate is estimated to increase revenues by $700,000 per year. Hahn said at Tuesday's meeting that a survey of diesel prices in surrounding areas left Decatur's prices favorably comparable, even with the tax hike. One citizen in public comments raised an objection, but Councilman Pat McDaniel replied that heavy truck traffic, while a sign of a bustling economy, also delivered a heavy pounding to the city's streets. I appreciate all the truck traffic we have in Decatur, which means we are doing well, he said. But trucks really damage the roads far more than normal cars do. So, you know, they, trucks, have a big stake in keeping our roads better for them and for the rest of us. Councilman David Horn pointed out that a survey of city-maintained streets showed a marked improvement in the 10 years that funds from the fuel tax has provided extra money for maintenance. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf cautioned, however, not to get too excited at the prospect of extra cash fixing all of the troubled highways running through her city. We need to also keep in mind that many of the highways that run through Decatur are state and federal highways, and we do not have jurisdiction over them, she added, and nor do we fund those repairs. World Economic Forum, Trump won't use force in Greenland, by John Boak, Will Weissert, and Amar Mandani, Associated Press, Davos, Switzerland. President Donald Trump insisted he wants to get Greenland, including right, title, and ownership, but said he wouldn't employ force to achieve that, using his speech Wednesday at the World Economic Forum to deride European allies and vow that NATO shouldn't try to block U.S. expansionism. What I'm asking for is a piece of ice, cold and poorly located, Trump said, declaring of NATO. It's a very small ask compared to what we have given them for many, many decades. He urged NATO to allow the U.S. to take Greenland from Denmark. The Republican president added a warning, saying alliance members can say yes and will be very appreciative, or you can say no and we will remember. Trump acknowledged, "We probably won't get anything unless I decide to use excessive strength and force where we would be frankly unstoppable. But I won't do that, okay? I don't have to use force," he added. "I don't want to use force. I won't use force." Instead, he called for opening immediate negotiations for the U.S. to acquire Greenland. "This enormous unsecured island is actually part of North America," he said. "That's our territory." The comments came after Trump spent weeks saying the U.S. will get control of Greenland no matter what it takes. He also argued that the U.S. is booming compared with Europe and its economy. "I love Europe, and I want to see Europe go good, but it's not heading in the right direction," Trump said. He added, "We want strong allies, not seriously weakened ones." He also said of European countries, "When America booms, the whole world booms. And you all follow us down, and you follow us up." Trump's arrival in the Swiss Alps community of Davos was delayed after a minor electrical problem on Air Force One forced a return to Washington to switch aircraft. As Trump's motorcade headed down a narrow road to the speech site, onlookers, including some skiers, lined the route. Some made obscene gestures, and one held up a paper cursing the president. Billionaires and business leaders, nonetheless, sought seats inside the forum's Congress Hall, which has a capacity of about 1,000, to hear Trump. By the time he began, it was standing room only. He also is expected to have about 5 bilateral meetings with foreign leaders, though details weren't provided. There are more than 60 other heads of state attending the forum. Trump came to the international forum on the heels of threatening steep U.S. import taxes on Denmark and 7 other allies, unless they negotiate a transfer of the semi-autonomous territory, a concession the European leaders indicated they won't make. Trump said the tariffs would start at 10% next month and climb to 25% in June, rates that would be high enough to increase costs and slow growth, potentially hurting Trump's efforts to tamp down the high cost of living. The president, in a text message that circulated among European officials this week, also linked his aggressive stance on Greenland to last year's decision not to award him the Nobel Peace Prize. In the message, he told Norway's Prime Minister, Jonas Gahr Støre, that he no longer felt an obligation to think purely of peace. His designs on Greenland could tear relations with European allies apart. Before Trump spoke, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer vowed during his weekly questioning in the House of Commons, "Britain will not yield on our principles and values about the future of Greenland under threats of tariffs, and that is my clear position." French President Emmanuel Macron, in his address to the forum, made no direct mention of Trump, but urged fellow leaders to reject acceptance of the law of the strongest. "It's clear that we are reaching a time of instability, of imbalances, both from the security and defense point of view and economic point of view," Macron said. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen warned that if Trump moves forward with the tariffs, the bloc's response will be unflinching, united, and proportional. She suggested Trump's tariff threat also could undercut a U.S.-EU trade framework reached this summer. The White House insisted Trump would focus on how to lower housing prices in the U.S., part of a fight to bring down the cost of living, which continues to rise and threatens to become a major liability for Republicans ahead of November's midterm elections. Instead, Greenland carried the day, with Trump lashing at Denmark for being ungrateful for the U.S. protection of the Arctic island during World War II, and continued to make his case that the U.S. needs to control the island for the sake of national security. He also kept mistakenly saying Iceland when he meant Greenland, mixing up the two countries four times during his speech and for the fifth time since Tuesday. When Trump did mention housing, he suggested he didn't support a measure to encourage affordability. He said bringing down rising home prices hurts property values and makes homeowners who once felt wealthy because the equity in their houses feel poorer. Meanwhile, Trump's Greenland tariff threat could disrupt the U.S. economy if it blows up the trade truce reached last year between the U.S. and the EU, said Scott Linnacombe, a tariff critic and vice president on economic issues at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank. Chick-fil-A cleared for takeoff in Forsyth by Tony Reed. Forsyth, it's official. The new Chick-fil-A restaurant planned for Forsyth has been cleared for takeoff. The village board met Tuesday night and unanimously voted to approve several planning and zoning variances the massive Atlanta, Georgia-based restaurant chain wanted before it could roost in Forsyth. The new restaurant will redevelop the site of the former Applebee's just off US 51 next to the Hickory Point Mall. It had told the village it needed a rules change so it could have an 80-foot tall pylon sign measuring 46 square feet each side and permission for its drive-through to encroach on the 30-foot setback and landscape buffer normally required under existing planning laws, amid some other changes. Forsyth's Planning and Zoning Commission had already signed off on the variances at a meeting January 15th, and they sailed through unanimously at the full board meeting. It's clear on our end, no problems, Village Administrator Jill Appleby told the Herald and Review on Wednesday. Now I am just waiting for a final word on when they, Chick-fil-A, plan to get in motion. The village hopes the multi-million dollar restaurant project will be breaking ground by the spring and the arrival of favorable weather. Appleby said the sense of anticipation among Chick-fil-A's many food fans is extraordinary. Oh, to see so many people be so excited about it, it makes us all here very happy, she added. Chick-fil-A has experienced extraordinary growth since the first restaurant opened in 1967 in Atlanta. It now has more than 3,000 locations and, by 2023, had become the nation's third largest fast food chain, second only to McDonald's and Starbucks. It's also become an international operation and gulped down $22.7 billion in sales in 2024. Richland Students Propose Tree Care Plan by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Starting this spring, Richland Community College students and staff who are interested will take a hands-on approach to beautifying the campus. Sarah Vogel, arborist with the University of Illinois Extension, will offer free classes to train the students to maintain the trees, recognize problems in time to prevent the need to remove diseased trees, and add more beauty to the campus in general. Student trustee Rochelle Pender presented the plan to the Board of Trustees at its Tuesday meeting, accompanied by staff member Josh McAlpine. The plan was formed, Pender said, with collaboration among students and the Extension arborist. Richland was designated a Tree Campus USA in 2012, and since then, Pender said, the number of trees has decreased, and along with them, some of the charm of the campus. I'm a student first, Pender said. I wanted to make sure the trustees were on board with it. The board gave their informal approval for the plan to proceed. A formal vote was not necessary. In other business, Isaac Zuniga, Vice President of Student Success, gave the board a report on enrollment trends. Nationally, community colleges are watching enrollment grow faster than traditional four-year institutions, and the greatest growth is among under 18 dual credit students, such as the ones in Decatur Public Schools Prep Academy. In fall 2018, under 18 students were 24.4% of total enrollment. In fall 2025, were 37.7% of the total. Zuniga said there are some issues with students that young, some of whom are not ready for the rigors of college. But Richland has strong support in place for them to help them adjust. The college is also working on creating a path for those who are interested in career and technical education, who don't have time to wait for a 2-year or 4-year degree because they have families to support. They want certification quickly so they can get to work. We don't want them to lose momentum, Zuniga said. The college is working with companies like Caterpillar Inc. to get those students that certification and provide them the help they need to continue pursuing an education with stackable goals. First, the micro-credential, then the short-term certificate, then a degree. Police. Man wounded in shooting, by Tony Reed, Decatur. A man suffered 2 bullet wounds to his forearm after a burst of gunfire on a Decatur street Sunday night, police report. Lieutenant John Kuhl with the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers had initially been dispatched to the area of East Cantrell and South 16th Streets for a 911 shots fired call at 11:13 p.m. And then, shortly after that detail, officers were dispatched to Decatur Memorial Hospital in reference to a gunshot victim, Kuhl added. The victim, age 23, says he was shot while in the 1000 block of East Moore Street, which is a couple of blocks from the original shots fired call. The victim said 2 subjects shot at him. Several spent shell casings were later gathered as evidence from the shooting location. Quell said Tuesday afternoon, no arrests had been made, and the investigation was continuing. And also on Sunday, police were called at 12:43 p.m. to the 1200 block of East Moore Street, not far from the scene of the shooting, to investigate damage caused by other gunfire. Kell said Ameren, Illinois workers had found a gas meter that had been hit by a bullet. A day or two earlier, someone in the area said they heard some gunshots, and those could have been the gunshots that hit it, or it could be they didn't hit it. We don't know, Quell said. U.S. may lose its status of having eliminated measles. By Devi Shastri, Associated Press. It's been a year since a measles outbreak began in West Texas, and international health authorities say they plan to meet in April to determine if the U.S. has lost its measles-free designation. Experts fear the vaccine-preventable virus has regained a foothold and that the U.S. may soon follow Canada in losing the achievement of having eliminated it. The reevaluation is largely symbolic and hinges on whether a single measles chain has spread uninterrupted within the U.S. for at least 12 months. Public health scientists around the country are investigating whether the now-ended Texas outbreak is linked to active ones in Utah, Arizona, and South Carolina. But doctors and scientists say the U.S. and North America overall has a measles problem, regardless of the decision. It is really a question of semantics, said Dr. Jonathan Tempty, a Wisconsin family physician who helped certify the U.S. was measles-free in 2000. The bottom line is the conditions are sufficient to allow this many cases to occur, and that gets back to de-emphasizing a safe and effective vaccine. Last year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention confirmed 2,242 measles cases across 44 states, the most since 1991, and nearly 50 separate outbreaks. The problem has been years in the making, as fewer kids get routine vaccines due to parental waivers, healthcare access issues, and rampant disinformation. More recently, Trump administration health officials have questioned and sown doubt about the established safety of vaccines at an unprecedented level, while also defunding local efforts to improve vaccination rates. The most important thing we can do is to make sure the people who aren't vaccinated get vaccinated, said Jennifer Nuzzo, director of Brown University's Pandemic Center. We have not issued a clear enough message about that. A Department of Health and Human Services spokesperson said January 15th that Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has consistently emphasized vaccines as the best way to prevent measles, adding that the CDC is responding to outbreaks and working to increase vaccination rates. There is little room for error in trying to stop measles. The virus is one of the most contagious, infecting 9 out of every 10 unvaccinated people exposed. Community-level protection takes a 95% vaccination rate. The current rate nationally is 92.5%, according to CDC data, but many communities fall far below that. My best guess is we will lose elimination status. Dr. Andrew Pavia, a Utah physician and longtime CDC consultant, said, "The case for this not being continuous transmission is tenuous, and I think they're likely to err on the side of declaring it a loss of elimination status." What's clear is that measles found ample ground in the U.S. in 2025, infiltrating schools and daycares, churches, hospital waiting rooms, and a detention center. New Mexico logged 100 cases and one adult died. Kansas officials spent 7 months trying to control an outbreak that sickened nearly 90 people across 10 counties. Ohio confirmed 40 cases. Montana, North Dakota, and Wisconsin each had 36. Now, more than 800 people have gotten sick across Utah, Arizona, and South Carolina since late last summer, with no end of sight. 2025 was the year of measles. Will 2026 be the year of rising or falling measles cases? Does it get worse or does it get better? No one knows the answer. Digest. Administration drops appeal of DEI ruling. Washington. The Trump administration dropped its appeal of a federal court ruling that blocked a campaign against diversity, equity, and inclusion that threatened federal funding to U.S. schools and colleges. The Education Department, in a court filing Wednesday, moved to dismiss its appeal. It left in place a federal judge's August decision, finding that the anti-DEI effort violated the First Amendment and federal procedural rules. The dispute centered on federal guidance, telling schools and colleges they would lose federal money if they kept a wide range of practices that the Republican administration labeled DEI. Jury acquits officer in Uvalde school shooting, Corpus Christi, Texas. A former police officer was acquitted Wednesday evening of charges that he failed in his duties to confront the gunman at a Uvalde, Texas elementary school during the critical first minutes of what would become one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. Jurors deliberated for more than 7 hours before finding former Uvalde Schools police officer Adrian Gonzalez, 52, not guilty in the first trial over the hesitant response to the May 2022 attack that killed 19 children and 2 teachers at Robb Elementary School. Gonzalez had faced up to 2 years in prison. Flanked by his lawyers, he appeared to fight back tears after the verdict was read. It was a rare case in the U.S. of an officer facing criminal charges on accusations of failing to stop a crime and protect lives. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 22nd, 2026. Please stay tuned.